Hello, this is the Made in Nature podcast, and I'm Carl Moore. Today's guest is my sweet sister, Jackie Moore, who's an artist, illustrator, anthropologist, and writer who has a passion for animal rights and vegan cooking. She has a degree, a BSc in anthropology from Goldsmiths College, London. And when she was 17, she was actually Miss Ireland. And for 10 years after that, became a high fashion model. Then she went into anthropology, spending a year with the indigenous people in South America and Mexico, and then on to the American Southwest. After, she also spent 6 years at the Esalen Institute in California, where she worked as art director. And after that, she went and off to India and Nepal for 6 months, before then starting work with the Norwegian Peace Initiative in Palestine, Sri Lanka, Kenya, Ghana, Slovenia, Kosovo, and Madagascar. And during this time, she always worked as an illustrator, artist, and writer. And she's currently based in Norway. Oh, welcome, Jackie. Welcome to the...
Hi, bro. Thanks for asking me.
Yeah, very welcome. So I suppose because your main passion right now is veganism and animal rights, I'd probably start off and asking, how did that come about?
Well, it's not just kind of right now. It's been a slow journey because, as you well know, being my brother, we were raised in an Irish Catholic kind of background, and with that went the food, you know, the meat and two veg, you know, dairy, and there was no question about it. This was how it was. And so my journey has been a gradual one. And I remember when, because we lived in many different places, and that kind of, I think it was training to be an anthropologist, because when you're a kid and you move somewhere and you're trying to fit in, you learn how to do participant observation, which is watching and seeing what the customs are and trying to fit in. Of course, I never did, but I tried. And I remember when we were in the States, being in grade school there, every morning a trolley would be rolled in with these little cartons, white and red cartons of milk. And no matter what we were doing, the class stopped and we were given this free milk. I think it was always around like 10 or 11 in the morning. And we were told, this is good for your bones, this is your calcium. And obviously the government, whoever was dispensing them, wanted to make sure that we were getting enough of this white stuff. So it was indoctrinated to us, you know, that this is what, you know, you had to have in order to be.
But let me ask you, you're saying that dairy's then not good for you. Is that what you're saying? I mean, when did this all come together? Because that was just an experience in your childhood. But there was a certain point when you said, right, I'm not going to partake of this. What was going through
your mind? Yeah, okay. It was that what I wanted to do was just say like how normal it was, and there was no cause to question it. And so I had little incidents like that. But, you know, I was in part of our culture, and I never had cause to question otherwise, until one day when we were in Ireland and I was coming home from school. And it was one of those beautiful summer days in early summer, and the sun was shining, and I was crossing this field, and it just looked so enticing to just lay there on the grass and have a little sunbathe. I vaguely remember seeing some cows way over in the next field, and I must have dozed off. I don't know how long I was asleep, but I woke up and I felt this breath on my arms, and I felt something with a sandpapery texture on its tongue licking my feet. And I could hear this breathing. And I opened my eyes, and I was half terrified and half fascinated. And I was looking right into the eyes of a beautiful cow's face. The cows had come and surrounded me. And in that moment, you know, when you're half awake and you're half asleep.
I did very well.
Yeah. And it was like a eureka moment, because I'd had a hamburger the day before. And it was as if the clouds had parted. And I had this revelation that these beautiful, magnificent, gentle creatures I had eaten the other day in the form of a hamburger. And that was it. I decided I'd never eat meat again. And I didn't. And that included fish and anything like that. That was the beginning.
There's two things going on. So there's the milk aspect. There's no killing of animals in that. And then there's the meat aspect. So there's vegetarianism, and then there's veganism. So veganism encompasses the vegetarian part. Vegetarians take milk and eggs, cheese and stuff, but they don't actually eat the meat. You're absolutely right.
And I didn't, you know, I thought I had arrived when I was helping the animals. I was a little bit self-righteous about it because I'd look down on people who were eating meat, but I was eating cheese and milk and yogurt and ice cream. So I didn't know that. But you're right. There is vegans don't eat anything from animals, but it's different from a plant-based diet, because people who take a plant-based diet also don't eat animals or meat or fish or dairy products or eggs or wear leather or, you know, none of this. So it's more a way of life. And that's the difference between a plant-based diet and veganism. And so you'll often hear about people, I tried to be vegan for a while and after 6 months I gave up. These are people trying a plant-based diet. They're not vegans, I don't think, because it's more about the animals and it's a bigger picture.
So can you just reiterate again, because I always thought a plant-based diet was vegan.
It is. It's not. But the vegan is that. But it's more about the caring of the animals. Like plant-based diet people will probably wear wool and leather. I'm not saying all do, but do you know what I mean? So it goes deeper than that.
So that would be in the category of free-range vegetables, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
You can have organic vegetables, but you can't have them free range, I think.
I
suppose one of the things that's in the back of my mind is you know, I was thinking before this podcast, is there any specific groups of people, let's say, who have evolved or over time, not necessarily religious, but that are vegan, have always been vegan? And before you reply to that, I was thinking then, what animals are purely vegan? And you do get groups like gorillas, giraffe, elephants. They're vegan, and they're usually the biggest animals.
That's true.
So, and then supposedly we have a descendancy to the chimpanzee, which is also largely vegetarian, but it eats meat from times. It's not only a scavenger, but it can become cannibalistic. So what I'm saying here is, veganism or vegetarianism even, is it natural for humans? Is it within us? Or is this something that you think that we now have the power to evolve towards, because we have such a smorgasbord of food available that we actually don't have to go and kill animals? So is it something that's already innately in us, or is it, are we partly, you know, meat eaters, scavengers, and maybe even cannibals, but because that we've come this far and we have the resources and means, that we should transit to purely vegetarian veganism? So.
Well, you've got a lot of really great questions in there, not just one.
Yeah, so, I threw it at you.
No. We've got lots to play with. No, I believe that we are herbivores. The way we are physiologically designed, there have been times in the past, maybe due to climatic conditions, where we have had to survive on whatever we could, the survival instinct, you know, in places that were, you know, like here in Norway, covered with snow and ice for a part of the year. But it's really, really interesting because the way we're, look at our teeth. I have to laugh when meatus, as I prefer to call carnists, they point to the incisors and they say, look, see, we're meant to eat meat. And then, you know, and you know, we're hunters, we're meant to do this. But if you look carefully, I mean, these tiny little things here, some people might have them a little bit more pointed than others, but they're designed to tear into plant fibers and leaves. And our jaw movements are side to side, which is a herbivore, you know, movements in order to digest.
But then it could be argued that because humanity's ability to use tools, which they thought it was the only animal up until recently, animals use tools all the time, that because instead of having to rip into the throat of some animal to kill it, we use tools, so we don't have to use those incisors. Are, could I say that those incisors, as small as they are, they've kind of atrophied over time because of that. Are they're only there for the odd kind of, you know, when you're picking over some carcass out in the savannas or something, you need to chew into a bone. I don't know. Okay. I'm just throwing it out.
Okay, Phil, but let me ask you this then. If we're natural carnivores, as you might be hinting at there, when you're driving pass and you see a dead animal at the side of the road that might have been rotting there for a day or two, do you start salivating and do you want to pull over and do you have this great urge to dig your teeth into it and eat it? Because that's what a carnivore would do.
Yeah, but when you have a McDonald's down the road, it's easier just to pull in.
Yeah.
Although there's probably not much in the difference. Yeah, no, I don't. But that's because I'm not at that level of hunger. You know, when you watch these programs and you see animals, I saw one where a hyena had ripped open the carcass of a giraffe and got in there and started to roll around within the rib cage in like pure mm-hmm. ecstasy. And of course the thing was rotting. And, but
well, so, maybe you should do that the next time you go to McDonald's. You could do that in your Big Mac.
Okay. We have to be careful here now. Yeah. Captain, okay, dropping okay, it the wrong okay. way.
We'll keep Thanks for
So thanks, I suppose. Really,
no. But just before you go on from there, you know, getting back to, you know, the past, and that's another thing. We'll get into that later. But they found that Neanderthals, who for a long time, you know, were thought to have been, you know, you always see the images of the cavemen, you know, sitting around the fire and they're gnashing into some animal part and holding bones and having a good old chew. But they found in an area in Belgium, they found some skeletons and they explored and examined them. And they found that indeed in their stomachs and in their teeth, they had eaten meat. You know, they also ate seeds and berries, but they also had meat because the climate was very different to there. But exactly the same time in the north of Spain, living at the same time, they found Neanderthal skeletons, and they examined the, you know, the teeth and the stomach, and they found that there was no trace of any animal product. They were, animal, you know,
parts.
Food.
Yeah.
Animal parts, exactly. But, and so concurrently, these Neanderthals were living at the same time, and not that far apart geographically, but far enough to make a difference. So that only goes to prove that the humans, our ancestors, had to do what they had to do in order to get by.
Well, yeah, well, I suppose that's, I was just sort of, you were saying that, I was thinking of the Inuit up in the Arctic Circle.
Yes.
And I don't think they have any, well, certainly as an indigenous culture, they don't have any plants to eat at all. It's all, I think.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Wow. And so, and yeah, yet they, yeah. I believe they were able, or do live to a long time, except now.
I have to correct you there, but they don't live to such a long time. But they also have one of the highest rates of atherosclerosis.
Yeah, but I was going to say that because they've opened up to the products coming from the whole industrial food complex, and so that's like with the South America, the Indians, and even in North America.
Native Americans.
Food came in, they can't handle certain types of food because it's so different to what they grew up with in the environment. And so there's problems of obesity and arthritis and things like this, only because their diet has changed. And so I suppose I'm kind of getting back to the theme of this whole podcast is the effect of the environment on the human body and health. And so, you know, these cultures were, the way I see it, were having not been disturbed, they come to a kind of an equilibrium with their environment. And even though they were hunters, I mean, in some capacity, they depended on, you know, the squash, the beans. I don't think they grew rice there. This sort of thing, and even desert plants, so that they'd become attuned to it. Or even when they killed an animal, a deer or something, they would pray to a deer spirit to thank it, because it knew that if they were taking the life of another creature, they also recognized that their time too would come, that their bodies and lives would become the food for something else. And so, to me, that seems a whole different world. It seems to be one of respect. And so I don't think you can just translate the idea of eating animals from back then to right now, because now we've got to the stage where the animals that we eat, we don't even think of them as animals. Like you say, we call it a product. And it's just too easy. And the way these animals are brought up in the industrial environment can be quite horrific, just to save a few cents. So the whole dynamics change. There's no respect. And so I think that if one treats their environment as such, which includes the animals, that has a repercussion. And maybe that's why people might be suffering a lot of ill side effects from, let's say, eating meat with that respect. I'm going to get a lot of flack for that. But what do you think on that?
Okay, again, many, many gems of discussion in there.
Yeah, I should have sent you a list. Sorry about that.
No, but you know, I do agree. Like Jane Goodall, you know, the wonderful primologist and, you know, fabulous woman. She was saying that one of the reasons we're having the challenges we have today with the environment and animals and disease is we've forgotten, we've lost our respect for nature, and. So we're out of balance for them. And again, you know, the Native American people of First Nation, many Indigenous people all over, you know, the world in the past, there was a reverence for nature. And we also have to look into that image we've been fed, oh, the caveman, we evolved or dissolved from eating meat. It's actually not true. 85-90% of food came from corn, beans, squash, whatever, you know, was growing there. And occasionally, maybe an animal was found and scavenged, or maybe they hunted, you know, whether they did or not. There is evidence that, you know, it did happen in places. But because it happened in the past, doesn't mean that we have to continue, you know, tradition. Tradition doesn't always mean that it was right. And we're living in a world now with many different challenges. I have to laugh when I hear about the paleo diet, because suddenly there was this trend, to eat like we originally did, like the caveman eat, and somehow that got translated to eating a lot of meat. In fact, people ate a lot more grains, even our carrots were a different shape. It was quite different back then. And I remember not too long ago, I was in the supermarket, and there was this shelf, and on it, it must have been a promotion for the paleo diet, and they had these paleo ready meals. So I went over and I had a look, and there was some kind of piece of an animal body part there, and it was some kind of chop. And then included, and this was wrapped, there was styrofoam base with a plastic covering, a big label saying paleo. And then it also had chocolate cake on it. And this was advertised as paleo. So I just am imagining if, you know, what the ancestors...
The Neanderthals they used to really, really love chocolate cake.
Especially on the styrofoam base, you know. Yeah.
Well, actually, when you said it was packaged,
I think there was spray cream on it too. You know, yeah.
Well, when you said that there was a I won't go there. I thought you said there's going to be a bit of fur attached to it or something. What was I going to say there? So the impact on the environment now, because you know, you can argue that when we transitioned from hunter-gatherer, where we weren't really leaving a mark on the land, and then we turned to farming practices where we started to cut back the forest to plant, and that was okay because we, you know, for most of our time we've been beating back the bush of the wilderness just to survive. But now we have the machines to devastate it. So that old idea now is, you know, I see things like in the south of Spain where all our vegetables, most of our vegetables are grown under plastic near the coast, which is kind of like desert. And even though they're just vegetables, that can have a devastating effect. I know that raising animals has even more consequences because of the water consumption. And not only that, but the methods in which these animals are held and dispatched. You know, I always think about the levels of stress that must cause, you know, when animals are raised like that. And to simply say that they're animals and they can't sense that is just not, you know, sufficient. So it troubles me, and that's why I'm kind of, I'm part-time vegetarian or mostly vegetarian, except I kind of...
Okay, but so that's the same. I'm just a part-timer.
But it's hard. But I'm saying...
I'm a part-time worker. No, but listen, getting back to the gathering, I mean, it was mostly gathering. Generally, there was hunting, but maybe just... not as much, it was mostly gathering. But when agriculture came in, you know, like you said, and ownership also came in, the concept of ownership. And when people were nomadic or semi-nomadic, there was a continual, you know, movement. And when people settled and agriculture happened, the forests, and this is my land, and you know, this is where my property ends and where you're, and you know, a lot of things happened around that time.
That's not totally correct, because even if you have a hunter-gatherer society, you see this in the animal kingdom, you know, they stake off their territory, so there's an ownership whether you're planting or not, because you want to make sure that if you're a carnivore, you want to defend your territory so you have enough opportunity to kill and eat something else.
We have natural territorial boundaries in ourselves as well, but I don't think that's really, you know, the point is that we didn't have animals corralled into tight spaces. We didn't, certainly, this is the predecessor for having herds of animals contained, and now there's factory farms, which are just horrendous places of torture and so hidden.
Yeah. Sorry, Jack, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No.
I was
sort of thinking that there's a separation between, you know, you're talking about the early days, you know, we didn't corral animals, but we had goats, we herded them, and we had cows. And they were like, because people would travel with them and they would eat, the goats would eat just about everything. And then they would defecate and that would help the land become more fertile and stuff. So it allowed civilization to spread. And we did have a few animals, and there's a human contact all the time, and it's quite different to what's going on now with these CAFOs. And I just wanted to make that distinction because there's
maybe can you explain to people maybe what CAFOs are?
Oh, I'm sorry. They're yeah, thanks. They're the what are the confined animal feed.
Operations.
Yeah.
Well, I just thought in case people were watching.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's absolutely. Yeah, no. And so, you know, like you get like, I think it's Virginia or so, North Carolina, they have a million hogs, some huge thing. And you never see one outside. They're all in these, you know, warehouses and, you know, the runoff from that, the excrement is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. So you what you're doing is you're causing it becomes a stressed area, and whenever you do that, it's obviously not good for the environment. It has to be ameliorated by something else has to come into balance. But if you have that concentration like that and it's totally unnatural, something else has to give. It's just the way nature works. But in the past, I see it like people would have herds of animals, and you know, they'd pick them off for food, and I guess the people were being picked off for food as well by things in the wilderness, and there might have been a symbiosis where the population was kept in check. It goes on. You know, this whole thing of food, how much is there, the population, how we've changed. Because the landscape has changed. So I think it's just not, you know, talking about eating meat. It's the whole industry of it that has changed. So where am I going with this? I suppose just to see how if we become aware of this, do we change? Do we all start eating these new things, functional foods that they're trying to promote? Where we can have burgers made out of flies or insects or crickets, and they taste just like meat, or genetically grown meat grown from stem cells. Are we just kidding ourselves? Or should we make things taste like meat? Is that the way out? Is that the way to get people to make that transition, to create products that are vegetarian but taste like meat? Or does that disgust some people? What do you think is the best way to move people over to a more vegetarian?
Well, first of all, I think people need to know what's going on. I think the whole animal agriculture business is shrouded in hiddenness. There, why can't, like Paul McCartney and others say, if abattoirs, slaughterhouses had glass walls, nobody would eat meat. It's hidden. We're being told a lie. I think most people are kind and good. They love animals. They want to do the right thing. And there's a huge disconnect, cognitive dissonance between what we eat and what we believe. So many times, I know I have very good friends that love animals, but they're eating, hamburgers and bacon while they're saying this. And me as a kid, not knowing, having any idea that drinking milk involved having a mother cow separated from her young calf, and the young calf being sent off in solitary confinement to become a veal calf. I had no idea. We're not told. We need to be educated. I think when people know, they'll make their own decisions. And then regarding, the animals, the animal agriculture, 98% of animals, food animals, come from animals that are in these horrific concentration camps. There might be some people who hunt their own or whatever, but that's not even including all the marine life that's been dredged from and unbalancing, the bottoms of our oceans. And then 100 billion animals are killed for our consumption, our use all over the world, 100 billion animals. And now you ask what impact that has on the environment in North Carolina, which is a huge center for pig farming. There are lakes full of fecal matter. And it's open. The poor people who live in the cities and towns next to this, they get eye diseases, the lung ailments, a huge amount. They get cancers just from breathing this in. What is it doing to our air? That seeps into our water supply. It's just your program is about nature. How unnatural is that? And that's not even getting to the antibiotics and the growth hormones and all the things that are pumped into these animals. And then people eat them. People eat this. They give the animals antibiotics so that most of them are sick, and this is to stop them from spreading. We're just terribly out of balance.
Yeah, the arguments for and against this, I think they're kind of screwed, because, I agree with you in what you're saying, the way things have changed. But then you can take the situation when you actually look back at nature, you see that everything eats everything. Everything is out hunting everything. And that's a very valid thing when you see that. And as I was saying, thinking that, I was thinking, where do you draw the line?
Well,
let me just make my point. Where do you draw the line between what is life and what isn't life? What is life that's sentient? If the fish eats, microplankton in the sea, is that okay? At what point should things not start eating things? And I don't know if you can answer that, but I think there's that, the natural process where things keep things in place. The weakest animal on the Serengeti Plains gets taken out by the lion. And that's probably a good thing, because the injured animal or the sick animal doesn't have to stay sick that long. And so it's dispatched and everything comes into play. But what I see is this has been taken to a completely other level now, where the industry, I think it all comes back to respect and being in balance. For me, everything eats everything. Life is death. It's the cycle. It's the big cycle. But what I think is the balance aspect, and part of that is the respect. That's the way I'm trying to frame it. So
first of all, we have to educate ourselves and not just fall for the myths we've been indoctrinated mm-hmm. with. And sure, nature is cruel. It's part of it, but there's also wisdom in nature. And by the way, 75% of animals don't eat other animals. There's 25% do, and they're natural carnivores. And even a natural carnivore like a lion, out in the Serengeti, when a lion stalks a herd of gazelles, they'll always go for the weakest mm-hmm. and the most vulnerable. They don't go for the strongest one. And in a way, even though that in itself is cruel, that is strengthening the gazelle gene pool, because the strongest of the gazelles will get away. You know what's happening now at this terrible canned hunting and canned hunting is when people pay, and literally they get an animal in a room and someone on the other side of the world can push a button on their computer and shoot that animal, and then the head is transported and it's mounted on their wall. It's a terrible, terrible industry. It's big money. But what's happening now, they're finding there's so much of the unnatural hunting going on that the gazelles and other animals, their horns are very, they're getting shorter and weaker. The animals are getting smaller because with the hunting, because the hunters want to go out, they identify it with big machismo, you know, I'm going to get the biggest, you know, lion whatever. So they're actually diminishing. They're destroying nature. They're and you know, humans have the are most horrible, dreadful habits, nasty habits, both in food and in, and this is concept of using animals. And then I go back, where did that begin from? You know, two of the arguments I come across most from people, oh, well, our ancestors did it, the cavemen. And if we examine that carefully, as we've touched on earlier, there are myths in there. There's tiny bits of truth, but it's mostly myths and stories we've been fed. The other thing is, well, God says it's okay. You know, we're supposed to God put animals on this planet for us to eat. It's not true.
Well, you know, you say that actually, and I can't remember exactly where it says it, but it seems to be in like the book of Genesis that we were all originally on a plant-based diet, and it was only later that God gave us the animals, are that thing that God created the world for our own use, that we could name the animals and it was for our use. Yeah. And maybe that was a translation thing, because we're also meant to be custodians. But it's this idea of placing man at the top of the food chain, which is kind of erroneous, because I think even within our own species, there's hierarchies of different sorts of people. And so your average person, like in the First World War, the guys couldn't use a bayonet to stab the enemy soldier. And 95% of them just could not do it. But once they were forced to do it, because I think they might have been shot by their commanding officer, once they did it once, it became the new norm. And we've heard that before, which is kind of interesting. It's pushing us into a new way of doing things, where we then accept it as being normal and it never gets questioned. So, you know, the stuff that we've been talking about, you know, you can argue it many different ways, but I think it all boils down to is that as humans, if each of us takes responsibility and faces up to actually what we do and our position and purpose in the world, that we have to ask these sort of questions of vegetarianism, veganism, our diet, what does it do for us? What does it do for the planet? All these sort of questions. So while I don't have any definitive answer, I think it's really good and important to talk about these things and bring them to light, even though a lot of people, you know, don't want to hear it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We getting back to the religions as well, just briefly. You know, all religions, most of the main religions, began with vegan principles. You know, thou shalt not kill, and one for don't harm other people. You know, respect for all living beings, respect for nature. We have everything that we need, fresh water. We began like this, and also just one thing. A lot got translated in those religious texts. For instance, the word meat was referred to as all food, as it did for many places, and even referring to the meat of mushrooms or nut meat. You know, it was taken out of construction. And in fact, when I'm not going to stick to just Christianity, but I'll just take the incidents when Jesus was dividing the loaves and the fishes. Originally, he was just dividing the bread, and it was added 150 years later that it was dividing fish, but that was added in by people who ate fish.
Okay.
So anyway, what I'm saying is a lot of these great religions, it was altered later and man-made rules came into it. But originally, they all started from a very good place with vegan principles.
Well, you know, I'm sort of thinking and yeah, I'm looking at the Bible too, kind of thing in that context. And the Old Testament was full of animal sacrifices.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, and they were all, you know, smiting each other and, you know, getting vengeance of the Lord and the Lord God loved the smell of burning flesh. That's in Genesis. And so I'm wondering at the same time, let's stand back and say, well, maybe, you know, our idea or the ancestors way back, their idea of death and life was different to what we have.
A lot of things were different then, but also at that time, you know, Jesus's brother James, they were surrounded by Ebionites, you know, who were strict, what we call, they didn't have the word for them, vegans, and Jesus was very against slaughtering, you know, and the Essenes, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, for the Last Supper, he had lamb. It's not true. He actually ate with the apostles who, they had a vegan meal before.
Well, no, but I was commenting on the religious aspect where they all started off okay, you said, and I think, you know, I think it was one where they saw life and death. The veil was quite small. And
yeah,
you know, I'm thinking of Valhalla and the Vikings or the American Indians say, oh, it's a great day to die.
Honor.
And that could be for many reasons, because the Medicare probably wasn't that good. Maybe it was with herbs. But, you know, they didn't want to die old, decrepit men or something. So they went to battle. And lived, but so life and death was right there. If you wanted to eat, you went out and killed something. And so when religion came along, it was to sacrifice something that was valuable to you. And when you do that, it's kind of reinforcing your own intent and your will to maintain a promise or a way of doing something. So I think in that sense, it has been there. But at the same time, you look at like the Hindu religion, there's, you know, the protection of the sacredness of the cow and life. I believe they're all vegetarians, if not vegans. And so it's the call. It seems to be to me that, you know, once you become aware of it, you don't actually need to eat meat. And nowadays, you actually don't need to go there. So either you can sort of figure it out and justify this, that, and the other, or else you can just say, hey, you know, I can move on, you know?
No, exactly. But I think, you know, I mean, this has been a passion of mine for a long time. And for me personally, I really don't believe we need any animal meat. We don't need animal secretions. We don't need any of this. There's plenty out there. Vegetables are full of protein. A potato is 7% protein. I mean, there's an abundance out there. And I have never felt so much energy in my life. I became vegetarian when I was a teenager, 14, 15. And I've only become vegan in the last 7 years. And the reason for doing that was a different reason altogether. But we really don't need it. And one of the first things people would say, oh, but what do you do about protein? Like this is huge fear of what will we, how many people die of lack of protein? Most people have illnesses related to probably too much protein.
Yeah. I mean,
really? Oh, he died of protein deficiency. It doesn't happen. It's another myth. The key is we are in a great information age. We have the internet and we have access to all forms of communication like never before. And what we need is information and the truth. Even these stories we've been fed about the past and you know how you know sacrifice happened in the past. We don't know who translated those Bibles and Qurans, we have no idea. And sacrifice was also probably a metaphorical, you know, maybe it's giving up a bad thought or a habit. It didn't literally mean the animal. It could have been the beast within. We don't know. The only thing we can do, the key is education and information.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's the way I'm kind of looking at it too. So
no, really. And I think most people want to do the right thing. And we have been fed a big lie. We've been told a huge big lie about, remember the Got Milk advertising campaign when they showed all the celebrities with, you know, milk mustaches and eating meat was synonymous with being macho or real men, you know, don't eat meat. I found we went to Sweden before they locked the border, and there was a big poster up for a restaurant. And in this, I don't know if you can't see it anyway, on this poster, this new restaurant said, if it ain't got four legs, it ain't food, and you don't make friends with salad. I mean, this sort of stuff was you know.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I know, I'm laughing.
You don't make friends with the salad.
This is what's going on, and I wouldn't mind, but all the, you know, the illnesses and the diseases, and now we're faced with this pandemic. And people, I even noticed, like, even Al Gore with his documentary, The Inconvenient Truth, and his other one, he never mentioned animal agriculture.
Yeah, well, that's not going down there. That's I'd have to open up a huge podcast for that. But
okay, that's another separate one.
Yeah, that's we'll mark that one down.
Even the words we use. Oh, I think I'll have some ham, and I think I'll have some nuggets, and you know, it's chopped up bits of a dead chicken, and it's a dead pig.
Okay,
you know, it's shrouded in these words. What?
Okay.
Am I getting carried away? Okay, I will strain myself because I know.
Okay,
it's
no, what I was going to say, what I was thinking of is yeah, the whole, we haven't even talked about the dietary advantages.
Don't get me started. Yeah,
and you know, I was just thinking certain athletes, you know, these high performance, and they find they to get the high performance, they go for the vegetarian.
Have you seen Game Changers? That documentary.
So what I'm saying by that, and we're coming to the end here, but it's just to show.
I was just getting started.
I know you were, and it's getting scary.
Now I'm all riled up.
Yeah. But listen, I have one question before I wrap this up. And honey, and vegans, and bees, what is honey? I've heard it was, is it get a little gross? Is it, what is it? Is it the regurgitated? Is it vomit or is it poo? And why don't vegans eat it?
Okay, well, where do you think it comes from?
I think it's regurgitated. I should have looked this up beforehand, but I know that vegans don't eat honey. It just came to my mind. You know, so. You know, and it's all part of where do you draw the line, I suppose. So maybe you just want to comment on that, the honey.
Sure. Well, bees, it's bee vomit. And
okay.
the bees regurgitate it for a reason. And what do we want to be eating bees vomit for? Because of the taste? So many things we think, oh, I like the taste. I like honey in my tea. Or, you know, we have to think, and it's the same with eggs. You know, one argument a family member actually keeps saying, I won't mention any names, but what's wrong with free range eggs from somebody who I know who six very happy hens? They're so happy, and they just leave their hens egg there as an offering. Surely there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Hens, when they lay an egg, a huge amount of energy goes into laying an egg, right? Mm-hmm. They'll lay an egg, the calcium from their body goes in, mm-hmm. many phosphorus, many, many minerals go into this egg. Mm-hmm. And so a hen will lay an egg, and then she'll go off and she'll do her other hen things. She will come back later and she will eat that egg, that she laid as a way to replenish the lost minerals and calcium. So when you take, oh, there's a gift for me, again, it's human selfishness and greed that animals are there for our use. And getting back to the Bible again, the word dominion, we have dominion over animals. That does not mean domination. It means caring for.
Well, maybe it's just a reciprocal relationship. You find these things that, like the relationship between the coyote and the rabbit. And I heard one author write, I can't remember his name, but it was a book, A Language Beyond Words. And he was looking at when a coyote would capture a rabbit in its jaws. And because this has happened millions and millions of times between the rabbit and the coyote, that once the rabbit feels the jaws of the coyote, it goes into a kind of an ecstatic state. It resigns. It knows it's done its duty. It's part of the whole cycle of life and death. So I'm saying even with the eggs, there's usually a reciprocal advantage, reciprocating. There's an advantage for having that relationship, sometimes I wonder, do cows in the field know where they're going? And they just put up with it because they're being protected by the farmer. They don't suffer from diseases, blah, blah. They have a good life. Well, certainly here in Ireland, they seem to go out in the fields and they're out there in the weather and they're happy.
Can I just say that there are things about nature we don't understand. There's a wonderful design there we haven't even really begun to fathom. Sure, the rabbit and the coyote have that relationship, but it's also the same with a cat and a mouse. They say a mouse can go into a state of euphoria as a way. Oh, and the last thing he'll see will be the jaws of that cat. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like people the mice are being numbed for that. Then we have lemmings. You know, when there's too many lemmings, they'll jump off a cliff. It's almost like the earth has a global brain. Even after the war, was it World War? So World War I and World War II, and there was the population level of men went down.
Yeah,
and the next 20 years, there were a lot more male babies being born. It was like nature's way. And how do we?
Well, that's it. The things once there's a disturbance, things come back to balance, and that's and that creates a new order. And so it's like cows, wild cows. They don't need to be milked by man, but because we bred cows in such a way that the milking cow needs man or a machine to be milked. So it gets to a stage where the new norm becomes normal, and it's not necessarily what nature, have to be careful here because we are nature. It's just that things always change and those relationships change. I mean, there's particles falling off us all the time that little microbes are eating and having a field day with, but even the microbes within us are then in return giving us energy and protecting us because they contribute to our immune system. So, at what point do we draw the line between what we eat and what we don't? The whole thing is complex, but I am with you on the side that the unnecessary animals don't need to be dispatched with unnecessary cruelty. Are exploited in the way they are. If they were treated in such a way as there was without that kind of a lack of respect. Lack of respect, I think it boils down to. And
Carl, when it comes back again to education and information, I mean, all kids, they come in with this natural love of animals. If you put a hamster and an apple in front of a toddler and he's hungry, he's going to grab the apple and eat. He's not going to eat the hamster. Well, most and anyways, as far
as I know.
And at what point is a kid an old nursery rhymes books, songs, that when kids are young they're surrounded by animals because there's great love for animals. At what point does a kid learn, oh, it's lovely, it's very good to pet the dog, but eat your pig on your plate? what kind of psychopathic message is that? And we all have been through it. It's okay to treat one animal like this and not think. It's as we have a golden opportunity now for change. You know, you said we are nature, but nature is cruel, and we're being very cruel right now. And yet it's under our noses. We have a great capacity to change, and it can happen very quickly. All, you know, food and nutrition that we need, we can get it from plants. And yeah. I love cooking. I love, and you asked before, you know, how do we make fake meat? Yeah, sometimes there's some really great soya products or, you know, imitating meat. And sometimes I use them because it's especially if I have my meatist friends come over, I make a beautiful lasagna using some of this, and they don't know the difference. They're very good as transition foods. But for myself, I prefer to mostly eat fruits and grains and vegetables,
yeah.
And these other yeah. and there's such a plethora, there's such a choice now, Beyond Burgers and you know, incredible things, and my friends that come out, they don't know the difference.
Yeah, it boils down to knowledge, because I was sort of thinking, if I get up the store and I get an unhappy meal at the local fast food place, I'll pay €7.
Yeah.
But I could also take that €7, and if I knew what I was doing, I could buy a bag of rice, I could buy some vegetables, I could buy things, I could probably get two meals.
Yeah.
That's a
very good point, Carl, because another thing is, I don't know exactly the situation in Ireland, but I know in other countries and in the States, certainly, if you were to pay for a hamburger without it being subsidized, they're all heavily subsidized. It would cost $55 for a hamburger. Now you can get a complete meal for, you know, the amount that you said. And then another thing is, some people are saying, oh, but you know, vegans, you know, that's a white middle class, you know,
there's a privilege aspect,
elite, it's for the privileged, blah blah. Yeah. It isn't. You can go out with that €7, like you said, you can get beans and lentils and sprouts for it would last you a very, very long time. And
excellent.
You probably save a lot of money not going to doctors and paying medical bills.
Okay, Jackie, it's we're going to wrap this up. It's been an
absolute
pleasure.
No, I'm not going.
Okay, no, you are going.
I'm going to
put your mute button on now. Down, back. No, it's been great. It's great to discuss this, to sort of air this stuff. It's something that I think a lot of people feel they need to make a decision right away without really, you know, discussing it, or there's all kinds of guilt and denial. So I'm not really saying it. I'm kind of discovering it myself. I'm part-time vegetarian myself. I haven't eaten beef.
No, but that's
chicken. Hang on, I'm wrapping this up.
That's a start.
And so maybe we can talk more about this at another dimension, in terms of maybe health or some other aspect of this.
Oh, yeah.
So do you have any contact details or website or anything like that?
I have my website. I have to update it. The best way is people contact me on my email. And what that is.
Well, why don't you say it? Oh, you don't want to say it.
Okay.
Do you have a website? Or do you have Facebook? Or what is it?
Yeah, I have Facebook. Yeah, Jackie Moore. But anyway, my website is www.jackieart.com.
Okay.
And I spell my name funny. JAKKIART.com.
Okay, that's why my emails.
Many people don't get my name.
Okay, listen, Jackie, that's great. Thanks a million for being on the show. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks. All the best now.
Look forward to it.
Bye-bye. Bye.